Journalist Jerry Mitchell has all sorts of colorful, poignant, and even funny stories. But unlike a lot of reporters, his reminiscences are time spent grilling members of the Klan. Mitchell is a white Southerner from Texarkana, Texas. He's been able to get some of the worst criminals of the civil rights era to speak on the record. And his reporting has led to 4 convictions, including Edgar Ray Killen for the deaths of civil rights workers Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner.
We're talking, and at some point he goes, "There's some guy in Jackson just keeps stirring things up and stirring things up," and I just didn't have the heart to tell him it was me.
Jerry Mitchell writes for the Jackson, Mississippi Clarion Ledger. I asked him to talk about the extraordinary career he's carved out by exposing unsolved civil rights cases. He's currently working on a series of articles looking back at the murder of Emmett Till.
Well, at this point, there's going to be a grand jury in LaFleur County, which is where Greenwood, Mississippi is, that will be taking up this case in March. And that's where it stands right now. The lone suspect in the case is Carolyn Bryant. Now, she's the one whom Emmett Till allegedly wolf-whistled at the store a couple of days before the Roy Bryant, and who was Carolyn Bryant's then-husband, and J.W. Milam came out and kidnapped him from Mose Wright's house, took him out and beat him and shot him, then tied a gin fan to his neck and threw him in the Tallahatchie River.
What's the significance of there being a grand jury now after the perpetrators are dead, after decades have passed? What's the significance of this to you? Does this feel like a victory to you?
I don't know about a victory. I mean, I think, you know, a friend of mine who's an investigative reporter has a button that says, "I just catch them, I don't fry them." So that's kind of my philosophy about journalism. You know, I just think that my job is just kind of expose the truth and let the truth lead to where it may go. So I think this is obviously the end of kind of a long road for that case. I mean, the two guys at the time, Bryant and Milam, were tried and were acquitted by the all-white jury in 1955.
And then only to
confess, right, months later to Look magazine and tell them the whole story. Oh, yeah, we did do it.
Well, you're the kind of person who some folks think of as a crusader and other folks think of as a gadfly. Someone who is exhuming the bones of the past.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe yourself?
You know, the best term I know to describe myself is probably a term that most people would consider an insult. It's the term muckraker. I just think of myself in kind of the traditional muckraker of the previous century. I mean, you know, they came along and they wrote about, you know, horrible conditions and factories and meat packing plants. And as a result of that, it led to changes in the way that food was handled, the creation of the FDA and the end of child labor, the changes to the way that the mentally ill were treated and dealt with. So I consider myself kind of in that tradition. I don't think of myself as, hopefully I'm not a gadfly, maybe a pest.
So I'm going to name some people, and
okay,
I want you to tell me how you got involved in pursuing the truth.
Okay, sure.
Byron Dilla Beckwith.
I mean, he was the one who killed Megger Evers. I talked to him over the telephone probably a dozen times, late 1989, early 1990. I had found out about these, the Sovereignty Commission was a state segregation spy agency here in Mississippi, thank God, no longer exists. It was run by the governor, and basically it turned out that they had secretly assisted Mr. Beckwith's defense back in 1964, and nobody knew that at the time. So I did a story, and the case got reopened. And so that led to me talking to Mr. Beckwith, and I went up and visited him in Signal Mountain, Tennessee, which is right outside of Chattanooga. This is April of 1990 now. We talked for about 6 hours, and it was starting to get dark, and so I was ready to go, and he insisted on walking me out to the car, and I'm like, "Really? That's fine. You don't have to walk me out." And he walks me out anyway. We get out to the car, and he says, "If you write positive things about white Caucasian Christians, God will bless you. If you write negative things about white Caucasian Christians, God will punish you. If God does not punish you directly, several individuals will do it for him." And so his wife had made me a sandwich. You can probably guess what I did with
it. Yeah, I was about to say. it's the rat poison that gives it that extra flavor.
Another time, Beckwith saw me cross the courtroom. This is after he got arrested and saw me cross the courtroom. Says, "You see that boy over there? When he dies, he's going to Africa."
I mean, this is funny stuff. I mean, these are some of the most serious crimes in American history, and yet you find a sense of humor in them. Does that allow you to go on?
I think
on?
Some of it's very funny, to be honest.
The movie, Mississippi Burning, which came out in 88, inspired you personally, didn't it?
Yeah, it was. I would say it's the beginning of my education. I went to see the movie with two FBI agents who investigated that case, Jim Ingram and Roy Moore, and a journalist who covered that case and others. So the thing that just amazed me is these guys that killed these kids got away with murder. They were never prosecuted for murder, and that bothered me.
Not until you got involved and Edgar Ray Killen was found guilty in 2005. I myself have interviewed Klans people, white supremacists, people involved in racial incidents. And one thing that I always am aware of is that because I'm black, there are certain things that people probably wouldn't tell me. And I know
that that's correct.
I know that going in. Do you see your race in the context of the reporting you do as an asset or even a weapon?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely an asset. In fact, not just being white, but being white, Southern, Christian. I mean, I remember I had to answer probably a dozen questions from Beckwith. Where do you go to church? Where'd you grow up? You know, those kinds of questions. And, you know, I could have declined to answer those questions, but I knew because of my conservative Christian Southern upbringing that every answer I gave he would like. Of course, he assumed I shared the same, his racial views, and of course I didn't.
Bobby Cherry, tell us about that case which riveted the country.
The church bombing and took place in Birmingham in September of 1963 and killed four girls in a church. And I mean, it just horrified the nation. In fact, a number of the people who got involved in the civil rights movement, including Mickey Schwerner, were basically inspired by that they were so horrified and outraged by that killing that they decided to get involved in the civil rights movement. And Bobby Cherry was one of the suspects in that case. I had talked to him briefly before, but this was in now the summer of 1999. I got an email from his wife saying that he wanted to talk to me. Of course, I'm thinking to myself, if I was a Klan guy, I wanted one of these old cases, would I talk to me? Probably not. But anyway, he wanted to, so I took him up on it. Drove over to Texas. He lived Maybank, Texas, and took him and his wife out for barbecue because I guess that's what you take Klansmen out for. I'm not really sure, but anyway, we went out. We talked for about 6 hours, and he said, "I didn't have anything to do with that church bombing. I left that sign shop." The sign shop's like 2.5 blocks from where the church blew up. "I left that sign shop at 9:45 because I had to get home and watch wrestling." He pulled out this sworn affidavit from a woman. Yes, I remember that night well. We're all sitting around watching wrestling. So I got back to the newspaper and talked to our librarian, Susan Garcia, and said, "Susan, just check with the Birmingham News and see what was on TV that night." And the next day, I had an electronic message from Susan, all in capital letters. There was no wrestling. In fact, as I found out, there hadn't been wrestling on for years on television, you know.
Well, how has this changed your life? I mean, do you feel, first of all, do you feel safe? Do you feel safe doing what you do, despite the fact that you are white and you are a Southerner and you can talk to people and take them out to barbecue, even if they may in the end regret heavily the price of that free dinner? Do you feel safe when you walk around, when you do your work, when you keep investigating?
I don't live in fear. I mean, I think it's one of those bridges I had to cross early as a reporter. Am I going to keep reporting on this or not? You know, just because I get threats, am I going to stop? You know, I decided no. And it does go back to my faith, you know, on a personal level, and been able to persist at this. And thankfully, some of these guys have been prosecuted and gone behind bars.
You mentioned your faith.
Mm-hmm.
Why would God allow this kind of a killing? I think that's a question that sure. the families of the children, the girls blown up in Birmingham would ask.
It's a good question. I mean, but obviously God, you know, he doesn't stop all evil from taking place. And that's what happened in these cases, I'm convinced. This was not generated by God, but generated by evil people, evil men carrying out evil deeds. And they deserve to be punished. I mean, someone who blows up a church and kills four little girls deserves to be punished no matter what the passage of time.
Well, Jerry, thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thank you
with
very
us.
Much.
Jerry Mitchell is a writer for Jackson, Mississippi's Clarion Ledger. His reporting has led to convictions in four previously unsolved civil rights era murder cases.